Gracias, señor, es contigo.
Felicidades. Ya se te estaba pasando el tren. ¿Estás contenta?
Feliz.
¿Y eso que no te gustan los niños?
Que no te truenes los dedos, Valeria. Vas a quedar chueca.
Lo que te está pasando es de lo más normal. Cuando uno se convierte en mamá, siente que se está partiendo en dos. Y espérate al parto. Literal, sientes que se te parten los huesos.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Fresh Cuts. This is Mike. Joining me, as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom? How goes it?
Bienvenidos a todos los madres. And for those who don't speak Spanish, that is greetings and salutations to all the expectant mothers. I'm doing pretty well, Mike. How the hell are you doing?
I am doing well, except for the fact that I got to report to jury duty tomorrow, so I got to do my civic duty. What are you going to say? All right? What are you going to do?
Hey, get you out of the house. Stop complaining.
What's crazy is I just served on a jury last year, and usually that means you won't get it for like a while, but I got one the very next year, so we'll see.
Luck of the draw.
Yep. All right. Also with us, as always, it's Don and Ellie. How goes it, Don?
Yeah, what's going on? Always happy to be here.
All right. Well, if Venom didn't, or if Venom's greeting didn't tip you off, maybe the fact that this just Shudder will help the clues for what we did this episode. It's Husera the Bone Woman. And this one
had some white boys. Say it right.
Yes. Well, why don't you demonstrate how to say it for me? Go ahead.
It's Wesera. We, not you.
Wesera. Okay.
There you go.
All right. So, yeah, this one, it's been getting a little bit of buzz for a while out of festivals. And it had a very, very limited release that earlier in the year, I know I didn't get screenings for. So we probably then if possible, but we just couldn't make it happen. Also, I would say this is probably the second episode in a row that it would have been nice to get a female on here to get some perspective, especially like in mine or Venom's kind of age group, preferably childless, because that's kind of like some of the themes we'll be dealing with this movie. I know we said similar things for Clock. This one I actually kind of did put the word out like a few days ago. The problem is just not enough people have seen it yet. There wasn't a lot of people to pick or even that would be eligible, just because most of the people that I know in the community that I would go to for it just didn't get a chance to see it yet. And it was kind of last minute. So no issues there. Just couldn't make it happen. So, yeah. So I'll take the synopsis off IMDb. Let's see, where is it?
It's on IMDb.
Yeah, there it is. Valerie, or how would Valeria?
Valeria.
Valeria. Valeria dreamed about becoming a mother. After learning that she's pregnant, she expects to feel happy, yet something's off. What is that something? We'll probably discuss a lot about that in a little bit. But first, let's get our general thoughts on the movie. So, Venom, what did you think?
I have this is an odd movie because it is a Spanish horror film from Mexico, something that I generally tend to gravitate towards. But I guess maybe because I saw this after Clock, I have some Clock vibes throughout. Now, you know, there are similarities. They're not the same story by any stretch. There are some very obvious similarities, but there's some major differences too. So I kind of do wish I would have watched this earlier in the year during its short theatrical run, but didn't get a chance to see it. Or should I say I decided to wait until the Shudder release, figuring that's when we would review it. Overall, this movie is beautifully made. It's a gorgeous film. There's some beautiful iconography in this film, some amazing cinematography, and this is a first-time feature-length director. This is Michel Garza Cervera's directorial debut as far as feature-length stuff goes. She's done a lot of shorts and music videos and stuff like that. But so for a debut, it is definitely impressive. It's a beautiful-looking film. There are some great themes throughout, you know, themes of postpartum depression, female body autonomy, you know, that a lot of the same stuff that we saw in Clock. This one, I think, is a little bit more effective with its horror elements. Some of the scenes are actually legitimately creepy. Unfortunately for me, most of that creepiness is early in the film. It's in the first act, maybe up to like the halfway point. Once we get to the halfway point, the quote-unquote hallucinations turn less horrifying, like supernatural horrifying, and more real-world horrifying, which, you know, might actually work for a lot of people. But the fact that this starts out as a kind of a supernatural story, but then turns into something else once we get to the end. Really, it's just more the story of a woman finding herself, gaining her independence, and gaining the bravery to make her own choices and not let her husband and her family make decisions for her. So in that aspect, the film is a triumph. It's an absolute success. But I definitely found myself losing interest towards the middle to second half of the film. Valeria herself is, you know, she's supposed to be our sympathetic character, but then she goes and makes decisions that makes me not like her very much, so that by the third act, I almost don't care. I don't care might be a stretch, because I do mildly care, but I care about as much as I did at the end of Clock, which, you know, says a lot, because we all kind of gave it a kind of a lukewarm review. I heard some great things about this one. I was really looking forward to it. And maybe because I heard a little bit of hype, maybe that affected my viewing of it. As I said, seeing Clock 2 weeks before this may have also affected my viewing of it. So overall, it's a beautiful film, really well made, good score, good cinematography. I mean, the filmmaking is spot on. The storytelling kind of loses me at the end. And I actually had to sleep on the ending to come up with an interpretation of what I think happened. After sleeping on it for a night and then kind of realizing the gravity of the very final scene of the film, I start to understand it a little bit more. Or at least, like I said, I'm coming up with my own interpretation. So overall, I'm going to say, you know, this is an above average, you know, supernatural, you know, thriller. It's hard to even say, call it horror. This could be another, you know, unreliable narrator situation, you know, all of this happening in her head type thing, blah, blah, blah. Ultimately, I thought the witches would be a lot bigger part of the film. And that was also a mild disappointment for me, that the witches are really only in it for like one scene. And the brujería, if you will, or witchcraft in Spanish, that they practice in the film, is it's kind of lackluster. So I don't know. Overall, I like the film. I did not love it. I was, you know, like I said, maybe I had my expectations were a little bit too high, but still a very watchable film, incredibly well made, and I would still recommend it. I'm going to have to watch it another couple of times before I can really decide where this sits, because it totally loses the tension and atmosphere that it had been building for the first half of the film. And then they just kind of abandon it in the second half. So it's a flawed supernatural, you know, thriller that, you know, that could have made me a little bit happier with its ending, but ultimately, still a good film, watchable, and I do recommend it. So check it out.
All right. I'll swing it right over to Dawn. What are your thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, I've been praising this one for a while. I caught it earlier in the year. I did catch its early screening releases and was able to get a early screener for it. And ever since then, I've always said this is my favorite film of the year. And it hasn't really changed. I still love everything about this well, not everything, but I love like 95% of what it does. I do agree with some of what Venom says, and that's where my 5% kind of falls in, because I do agree. Valeria is kind of an idiot the longer this goes on. Some of that could probably be pregnancy brain, although not being of that gender, kind of like with Clock, I do want to reserve a little bit of that for you know, somebody that's gone through that, which unfortunately the three of us can't really lay claim to being. I mean, you know, he is spot on, you know, not having a woman on board kind of, I don't want to say ruin the experience, but I do want to say that, you know, the three of us are males. We don't really have much experience with, you know, prenatal or pregnancy or whatever term you want to use. We don't really have much experience in that. So I do want to say that there is some that you can probably say aren't really related to pregnancy brain, but then I can always also say, well, it's just pregnancy brain. So some of those circumstances I can write off, some can't, but you know, again, that's, you know, personal interpretation of everything. But yeah, I do agree. I do like the story here. I do like the setup with, you know, we get to know her. We get to know everything about, you know, what motherhood means to her. We do get a smattering of supernatural sequences that are kind of creepy and unnerving, and it kind of plays along with the setup really, really well. Some of the stuff is less intense the longer it goes on, which is a little weird, but I do like the final act. I do like some of the imagery that goes on with the witches in the woods and, you know, the titular specter itself, whatever, you know, supernatural being this is. I do think that some of that stuff is terrifying enough. A lot of this is, again, not necessarily for a man to speak of. Some of the sequences that go on there, but yeah, overall, I do really like a lot of what it does. I do think that there's some great stuff here, even if, you know, none of it is personally identifiable for a man. I do think that there is some validity in what Venom says. You know, maybe Clock, and then, you know, Huesera is a kind of a, you know, odd follow-up, but overall, I still think this is, at the present time, this is still my favorite film of the year. So I don't know if that speaks of anything, but yeah, this is very, very, very high on my list. Will easily be on my top 10 of the year, and we'll probably still have a high place when we finally do our thing at the end of the year. But yeah, overall, really good stuff, and has a lot to like. So I guess that's all for me.
All right. Well, color me shocked, but I'm actually with Don on this one. I really like this movie. And, you know, watching it back-to-back with Clock, to me, that just, it almost had the opposite effect, because for me, it just made me think that Clock was a little lesser, and this just is better. Because I think Venom brought it up. Both movies deal with a similar theme, not quite 100% the same, and the main characters are coming at this a similar issue with different angles on like what exactly they're going through. But I just thought this one was really well done. I thought what they did do with the scares were effective. Now I was able to watch it twice. After the first watch, I had to look up like kind of the lore of like the Bone Woman, like that myth and all that, to see for myself, like, you know, the details about it, how it was kind of integrated into the movie. And it made me, and on the second watch, it made me just appreciate it more. I love the fact that it kind of takes, it kind of reminds me of the way, you remember, but Tigers Are Not Afraid. How it takes like a real world issue, and it integrates horror elements into the experience that you're going through in real life. You could almost make the same movie a straight drama without the horror, but the horror kind of enhances everything that the main character is going through. I agree. Like, to me, the ending, I think I have a pretty good read on what was meant by the final scene, but boy, do I think it's going to polarize audiences. Not as far as interpreting it, but like the decision the main character makes at the end, I can see people pissed off. And we haven't got a lot of talk about it because, like I mentioned at the beginning, I don't think a lot of people just have seen it yet. So I haven't seen a lot of discussion out there except for, like, you know, the bigger outlets that reviewed it during its original theatrical release. But I am looking forward to seeing what people think about it, especially the end, character motivations, all that stuff. I think this movie kind of takes it nice and slow. Deliberately to go through the entire process of what the main character is going through, from like finding out when they're pregnant to when the baby is born, how they're not seeing kind of like the effects that, you know, you would assume would happen, almost quite the opposite in this movie, you know, keeping it without spoilers obviously for now, but I enjoyed the, well, I guess enjoyed is not the right term, but I was fully on board with the journey that the character was taking through the movie. And at the end, while I might not agree necessarily with the decision the character made, I still kind of understand the motivations behind it. I guess that's pretty much it for my general thoughts on this. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. And I thought the cast was great, too. And, I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both you guys. The quality aspects of this movie are very high quality. The filmmaking, the performances, you know, line deliveries, all really, really works well. The score, as I mentioned earlier, the editing, I mentioned the iconography earlier. There's some beautiful, right at the beginning of the movie, there's a beautiful shot of a statue, of a giant Virgin Mary statue that fades into the image of a burning woman. And it's a gorgeous shot. And obviously there's no context because it's right at the beginning, so you don't really know what you're looking at. But yeah, I definitely feel like the filmmaking is spot on here. I mean, you know, even if the storytelling may not be where I want it to be, and it was for the first half of the film, like I said, it felt like the first half of the film, how can I put it? It's almost like Malignant, but not nearly as egregious as Malignant, where the first part of the film seems like a supernatural thriller, and then the second part just kind of turns into a psychological thriller. It all becomes, you know, something mm-hmm. of the mind and what this woman is dealing with personally. So, you know, sometimes when movies take left turns like that, they kind of tend to lose me. This movie didn't lose me necessarily. I was still interested all the way through the end. But yeah, once we get to the ritual at the end, most of my notes are just what the fuck. Just over and over again. What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck? What am I looking at here? The very end of the ritual, I understand, but yeah, maybe my co-host can enlighten me on it. And I've watched multiple reviews of the movie since I've watched it, and no one else can really put too much interpretation on what we see in that ritual. But I think this is the good thing about this film, too, is that it leaves the ending up to the viewer. You know, you can come up with your own interpretation of what the ritual was, if it worked, how it affected Valeria, and you know where the movie kind of ends from there. So there's still a lot to discuss in this movie. There's a lot to talk about, I think, if you watch this with a friend, preferably a female friend, or if a group of female horror fans were to get together to watch this, I think that conversation afterwards would be very enlightening. Because like I said, this movie had a lot of the same frustration that Clock did. Except within Clock, it was more frustrating because that woman didn't want kids at the beginning. And between familial and societal pressure, she goes and gets treatment to make her want a child. This woman very definitely wants to make her husband and her family happy, but I think she's conflicted. There's definitely a conflict there where she's not 100% sure if she's either ready or willing to be a mother. And like I said, some of the events that occur both pre and post birth kind of, you know, accentuate that point a little bit. And that's why, you know, my interpretation of the ritual and how the movie ends may be a little bit different from others, but I, you know, for whatever it's worth, It's my interpretation, so right or wrong, it's mine. But everyone's going to have their own interpretation, I think, when they finish this film. You know, if you make it to the end, I can see a lot of horror fans start giving up towards the third act when they realize, oh, this isn't nearly as horror as I thought it was going to be. It's not a long movie. It's only an hour and 37 minutes. So, you know, it's right at that sweet spot. You know, 90 minutes is usually the sweet spot. But with a movie that's this well made and this well acted, I'm okay with 97 minutes. Absolutely. I just really wish that, and again, to echo Don and Mike's point, yeah, I think a female voice on this episode maybe could have put some clarity on some of the things that we see in the film that us, you know, penis bearers don't understand. But, you know, what are you going to do?
And especially someone with, I think, a Latin background, that would probably have been the best, just to understand exactly all the purposes of the ritual.
Sure. I can vouch for a lot of the Hispanic stuff in this movie. Obviously, the movie's set in Mexico. I am a Spaniard, but, you know, Latino and Hispanic culture, you know, cross over a lot. So, yeah, the pressure of a female to have a child in a Hispanic family is heavy. I mean, to the point where a female that doesn't have a child, a Hispanic female or Latina female that doesn't have a child, is looked at as almost like a failure. Like, she didn't do the one thing that God put her on this planet to do, which is procreate. I think that's such a, you know, especially in 2023, it's such a shitty attitude. But again, it is very existent in the Latin and Hispanic community. So I can definitely vouch for that. I've seen it in person. Like, I've actually seen my own cousins give my wife shit for, you know, for us not having kids. You know, mild shit because they're, you know, since they don't actually share blood. But, it, you know, I have seen it also with my female cousins. I do have one female cousin who's very independent, never wanted children. And yeah, to watch her own mother talk about how, you know, what are you going to do with all your time? How can you consider your life a success without a child? I mean, to sit there and listen to that shit was heartbreaking for me. I can imagine what the girl being spoken to is feeling when she's hearing these words. So yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, I'm going to bring up Clock a lot because, like I said, both films are have a little bit of a frustration level in watching them. This one less so than Clock, but, you know, I definitely like where this one went as opposed to Clock. And like I said, once I kind of came up with my interpretation of the ending, my score went up a little bit, even though my interpretation may be 100% incorrect. It just kind of adds a little bit more to both the movie and Valeria as a character.
I also feel like on a second watch, to me, it went beyond even just the having a kid part, like elements to her life, kind of her life before and what her life has become, kind of stuff we can get into during like spoilers because I don't want to divulge all that at this moment, but. It's definitely along the same lines of, like, you know, conformity, doing what society or in her case her family thinks is the right thing to do versus, you know, I want to make my own way in life the way I choose to, and the pressures, and there's immediate hostility. And then also from her own family, she's almost like it's weird the way, and I don't know, Venom, if you have insight into this, obviously, because of the reasons you stated, you have more direct experience. But like, her family is all passive aggressive about it because it's like, yes, this is like the path we want you to do, but at the same time, they're almost kind of mocking her at the idea of her doing it. It's like they recognize that there's something different about her. But it's almost like too bad that there's something different about you. And you still have to do this because that's what you're supposed to do. Like, it's a very weird dynamic.
Absolutely. I mean, if passive aggression was an Olympic sport, Hispanic countries would win all three medals. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I said, to see that in action, you know, and I was a teenager at the time, and I'm thinking, why do you care so much what your daughter does with her life? Like, why? And again, Hispanic women, just like motherhood is a rite of passage for them, grandmotherhood is also a rite of passage, so that they then feel if their daughter doesn't have a child and doesn't make them a granddaughter, that it's like a failure on two levels. And it's just such bullshit. I can't stand it. Luckily we live in a world where that happens less and less, but it still does absolutely happen. So,
there's a dinner scene, and her sister kind of indirectly calls her out straight up for like the situation.
Indirectly, my ass.
Her sister. Oh yeah, she called. I just meant like she doesn't explicitly lay out every reason why this is all a lie, but she basically says, like, you know, you're living this lie that, and like you're not being honest and all that kind of stuff. But we can get into that more once we get spoilers.
But what's funny is that the sister will be saying things like that, but then in the other side of her mouth, she'll be saying, you know, oh, you know, you should have a kid. You know, you should have kids. Look at how happy my life is with my two kids. And all I see is a fucking a single mom with two kids still living with her parents, for fuck's sake, because, you know, she can't support herself. So it's like, is that really better than Valeria, who has a career, a husband? It's just, God, yeah. Some people can't see the forest for the trees, my friend.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think we're probably ready for spoilers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, unless Donna has anything else.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I mean, I don't think I have anything left.
Cool. All right, so this is your final spoiler warning, folks. We're going to go into our little mini walkthrough of Weseda, the Bone Woman. Our movie opens up with we meet Valeria. She's with members of her family, and she's on what seems to be almost like a religious pilgrimage, where she's climbing these hundreds of steps to get up to this giant statue in Mexico. As I mentioned earlier, I think it's the Virgin Mary. I'm not a religious guy, so I'm just going to say it's the Virgin Mary. It could be someone else. It could be the patron saint of, you know, whatever. But it's this big giant gold statue on the side of a mountain. And when the camera pans out, I don't know if it's a drone shot or if they actually had a helicopter or whatever, but this beautiful shot as it pans out, showing the immensity of this statue. And then it fades into an image of a woman in a robe who's on fire. And I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. A beautiful way to start the film. After that, we're introduced to Raul, her husband, who seems to be a good guy throughout the film. He does kind of fall into the skeptical spouse trope that I can't fucking stand. You know, husbands that don't believe their wives when they tell them that something's happening with them or in their house, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, he starts out as a good guy, turns into a trope. And, you know, then how the movie ends with him is, you know, up to your interpretation. I think most people would consider him a good guy throughout, maybe just skeptical. No big deal.
I think he's normal. I think they did a good job avoiding having like the husband be like over the top, because like I think some movies would be handling similar themes, they might be like more overbearing about like wanting to have kids, or, you know, or like, this is what I want, this is what we should be doing. And most of his skepticism too, it grows throughout the movie, but it's also because of influences from her family too, like what they're putting in his head as well. So I think they handle it pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so after we are introduced to Raul, we then find out that Valeria has finally become pregnant. We see her and Raul kind of celebrate. Throughout the course of the film, we also see that she makes furniture for a living. She is an artisan, making some really nice handmade furniture, and that's kind of her career, how she's helping, you know, the family make money. They do mention Raul's career, but I completely forgot. I think it's in advertising, something like that, but I forget completely. So, and then after they find out that Valeria is pregnant, they go to have a meal with the family, and this is kind of where the family, you know, starts giving. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. There's two dinner scenes. There's one before they find out they're pregnant and one after. The one before is where we're introduced to the family. This is where we're introduced to her sister, who already has two kids. doesn't seem very nice, like doesn't even say hi to her sister when she first walks in, just kind of ignores her. You know, the mom has to kind of come in and say, hey, are you going to say hi to Val? Blah, blah, blah. And you can tell that there's animosity between the two. I think they're just two very different women, whereas Val was very independent, career-oriented. I think her sister, I believe her name was Norma. Vero. Her name was Vero. I feel like Vero is very just more traditional, like she wanted to have kids right away. Because, I mean, one of her boy is already like 12. He looks like he's about anywhere from 11 to 13, 14 years old. So she's obviously had kids for a while. She had them young. So obviously the two sisters are very different. We're also introduced to their parents who, you know, again, are very adamant that she have kids, that it's the right thing to do, blah, blah, blah. At one point, they even mom actually kind of implies that it is a woman's place to, you know, to extend the family, you know, the family line and the name and everything else, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, very shitty. Then, like I said, we do. And then during this dinner, a story is relayed from Vero tells a story about a young Valeria that when she was younger, she was handed a child to hold on to for a couple of minutes. And that apparently she had lost her footing and lost her grip on the child and dropped the baby down a flight of stairs. And that potentially that child has maybe some brain issues now. Oh, we don't meet the child. It's not anyone in her family. It's just, you know, some, you know, random friend of the family. So that becomes like a point of contention for Val, something that happened to her when she was a teenager that she can never live down. And, you know, that kind of fuels the whole theme of she is not going to be a good mom or that she's not ready to be a mother, whatever the case may be. The whole time I'm thinking, you know, I as the movie goes along, I start to think that Valeria doesn't really want to have a child as much as was implied early mm-hmm. on. I feel like, you know, she kind of bends to her family's will. She bends to Raul's will. Exactly. And then, like I said, then we find out that Valeria is pregnant. Her and Raul celebrate and almost instantly the hallucinations begin. She starts seeing weird shit. And honestly, the very first hallucination is probably my favorite in the movie. It's so fucking gnarly. She's basically looking out the window and she sees a random woman, a woman that she has seen multiple times throughout the town. And every time that she sees her, she's just staring at her, not moving, not doing anything, just staring right at Val. So on this evening, Val's looking out the window, sneaking a cigarette because she's not supposed to be smoking. Of course, she's pregnant. Even before she was pregnant, her husband seemed to have an issue with her smoking. She's looking out the window, and we see that same woman staring at her. Val decides to wave to her, and right when Val waves to her, the woman starts to climb up on the ledge of her balcony, almost like she's going to commit suicide, and then, whoop. Off she goes. She jumps. We don't actually see her land because Val moves away from the window. She obviously doesn't want to see the landing. But then after a couple of seconds, she looks out the window and she sees that the woman is on the ground dead with both of her legs broken. But then suddenly the woman starts moving. And we start getting that traditional bone cracking sound effect that all horror fans are probably sick of at this point. You know, and we see the woman, you know, the woman's body on the ground, her head picks up and stares directly at Valeria. She gets freaked out. She calls her husband over to the window, you know, to take a look. Obviously, there's nothing there. It was just, you know, Val's hallucination. Later in the evening, there is another kind of cool hallucination. This one I thought was shot beautifully, where there is like a spider. They live in an apartment building. Val and Raul live in an apartment building with a kind of a squared off staircase in the middle of the building. You know, we've seen it in countless movies before, where potentially somebody could fall to their death. But what they do is they have the camera on top looking down so that you could see multiple levels at the same time. And what we see is Val go down a flight of stairs away from her door, and then we see the woman who jumped off that building in the earlier hallucination crawl into her apartment and slam her door shut, which of course locks Valeria out of her apartment. She, you know, she wakes up her husband to get in. She's hysterical because she's convinced that somebody's in her house. Obviously, they don't find anything, so Raul just kind of, you know, blows it off, and, you know, they go back to bed. Now, the hallucinations start to really take a toll on her. Like, she's actually worried that this thing might be after her. At one point, she has a hallucination. You might call it a dream, where this thing that's after her, I guess we could call her the Bone Woman, but I mean, based on the real Mexican legend, there's not a whole lot of similarities in this movie with the Mexican legend, but we'll get to that. I'll go over the legend. I've got it here ready to talk about in a little bit here. But anyway, we get a cool little dream sequence where at the end of the sequence, it seems like the specter breaks her ankle, and she wakes up screaming, thinking that her ankle has been broken. But of course, it's not. Everything is fine. At this point, Raul is starting to worry. You know, he's talking about, what if I need to commit her? You know, is she a danger to the child? Blah, blah, blah. And we actually do see that she does start to become a danger to the child. After she starts having these hallucinations, she stops eating properly. She actually loses weight through the first 2 months of her pregnancy, which, you know, her doctor and husband are both absolutely shocked by. You know, she actually lost weight. And we even see a scene where Raul makes her breakfast, and, you know, she takes a bite of it in front of Raul to show that she's eating. But then as soon as he walks out of the room, she spits that bite out and throws away the rest of the omelet. It seems very intentional that she's not eating. A, she's not eating, and she's smoking. So it's like, at this point in the movie, I'm like, does she actually want to be a mother? This is where the conflict comes in, I feel like. This is where her earlier conflicts from when before she was pregnant are now manifesting in hallucinations. And that's what this specter is. It almost like it represents, you know, the Valeria that's not ready to be a mother, if you will, or potentially the other one. I'm not sure. Up to interpretation again. Throughout the film, Val cracks her knuckles. Like, literally every time she's talked down to, every time she gets upset, every time she gets scared, anything, she starts cracking her knuckles on her hand, obviously on her hand. She starts cracking her knuckles violently. One of the hallucinations that she ends up having is that she bends one of her fingers all the way back in the wrong direction while, you know, going through one of these cracking knuckles situations, you know, scenarios. So, again, another kind of cool hallucination. Eventually, Valeria starts to worry about the safety of her and her child. So she actually seeks the help of a bruja. And of course, bruja is Spanish for witch. And as it turns out, her aunt is actually a member of a coven of witches. So the aunt takes her to the I guess, the main witch. I mean, they never actually give her a title in the film. And she basically does this little, like a little mini ritual where she kind of blesses the child. Doesn't, you know, do anything too crazy, you know, witchcrafty. Just kind of, you know, it just looks like, it seems like a general chant and, you know, a general blessing for the child. She tells Val, if this didn't work, then there's one other thing that we can do, but it goes into some dark places. And I kind of thought it was cute that that line is repeated three times in the movie. It goes in dark places. Or, yeah, it goes to some dark places. That is the exact line. And I'm like, ah, these women know exactly what they're doing. There's no, like, there's no lying in them. They know exactly what they're fucking doing. So I kind of like that. Unfortunately, let me bring in Octavia at this point. At one point in the film, early on in the pregnancy, Val wants to have sex with her husband. Raul says that he's kind of creeped out. He's like, what if we hurt the child? Which, of course, is bullshit. You can't fucking hurt a child by having sex with a pregnant mom. But again, Raul's kind of an idiot. So basically, he's not going to have sex with this woman for 9 months, which is fucking bullshit. I mean, a married couple go 9 months without sex. What the fuck? So anyway, due to that and due to Val, I guess, just being fucking horny, she ends up going back to visit her ex-girlfriend. I don't know if they were actually in a relationship, but they were definitely, you know, playing around, making out, blah, blah, blah. She ends up going back to visit Octavia, who's an old childhood friend that she grew up with and obviously had feelings for. And she ends up fucking Octavia. We end up getting this actually a really good lesbian sex scene that isn't too egregious by any stretch. You know, it's actually fairly tasteful, but it's actually one of the nicer ones I've seen. So bravo there. And of course, the movie's directed by a woman, so it makes sense that it's a nice, tasteful sex scene. Mm-hmm. And this is where she starts talking to Octavia about, you know, her misgivings and, you know, potentially, you know, am I ready to do this? Do I really want to do this? Do I even really want to be with a man? Because obviously, you know, Val used to be with Octavia. So, you know, there's also the nature of sexuality explored a little bit in this movie. Val does end up visiting Octavia multiple times, which is where I start to lose interest, because it's like, listen, no kind of pregnancy brain is going to make a woman cheat on her husband. I mean, if anything, a pregnant woman looks at her husband as a fucking knight in shining armor, the man who got her pregnant, unless he's a piece of shit, obviously. But in this situation, she should have spoken up. She should have just said, whoa, you're not going to have sex with me for 9 months? No way. That's not going to happen. But instead, she bites her tongue, as she always does with her family, with her sister, with her friends, everybody. She just kind of bites her tongue and accepts it, accepts the abuse, which is unfortunate because it's definitely wearing on Val. Eventually, on the second or third time that she visits Octavia for one of these little trysts, she ends up getting into an argument with Octavia because she starts talking about, because Octavia obviously knows that she's married and pregnant with a child and knows that she's cheating on her husband to come here and see her. And obviously Octavia is, you know, doesn't like to be played with. She's like any other person. She doesn't want to be an option. You know, she wants to be the one person that's a focus for, you know, another person. So it's kind of, you know, Val kind of frustrates her a little bit, and she ends up kind of booting her out of the place that they're at. They're at like a little party with a live band playing. And then once again, I don't know if this is her psychosis kind of taking over, but she decides to jump into the mosh pit at a punk show while 9 months pregnant. I repeat, 9 fucking months pregnant, and she jumps into a mosh pit. Now, granted, you can tell she's never been in a mosh pit in her life because she doesn't know what she's doing. She's not like slamming into people. But the point is, she eventually gets hit enough and starts hallucinating, you know, people with no faces and, you know, other weird, you know, horrifying hallucinations. And eventually she goes into labor. Yes, my friends, her water breaks right there on the fucking the mosh pit. She ends up going to the hospital and having the child. She ends up having a girl, a beautiful, healthy baby girl, and takes her home. Unfortunately, the little mind hiccups continue to happen. At one point, Raul has to leave town overnight, and obviously he's kind of fearful of leaving the child alone with Val because of, you know, Val's little mental issues recently. And, you know, he kind of even asks her, why don't you call your mother, you know, have her stay with us or stay here with you to help take care of you. And, you know, Val declines and says, no, I'm fine. That evening, the baby is crying. And the baby is very obviously crying because it's feeding time. But instead of like holding the child and caressing it while she's bottle feeding it or breastfeeding it, she takes this little bottle of milk and just sticks it in the baby's face for like a minute. We don't see if the child actually eats anything. I doubt it because she never stops crying. Eventually, Val goes to bed. Baby is still crying, and you can see her get frustrated, and she finally whips off her blankets and she gets out of bed. You hear her go downstairs or to another part of the apartment, excuse me. And then the baby suddenly stops crying, and instantly you know, you're just like, oh shit, what did she do with this kid? She ends up falling asleep, and being woken up the next morning, mind you. I don't know how much time has passed, but when the baby stopped crying, it was still dark out. And when she's woken up by the phone call by Raul, the sun is out. So you got to figure it's been at least a few hours. After she gets off the phone with Raul and realizes that the sun is out and it's morning, she realizes she hasn't heard her baby say anything, and she starts to realize, oh shit, I may have done something in like a, you know, hypnotic state or something. I might have endangered my baby. The first place that she looks is outside her apartment window, thinking that she may have potentially thrown her child out the window. She's frantically looking through the house. Finally, she looks in the goddamn refrigerator, and the baby is in there alive and well, not even crying. I'm pretty sure a human baby can't survive that long in a refrigerator. I don't know how much oxygen is in there, but on top of the temperature. But again, we'll leave science out of this one. So she ends up getting the child. The child's okay. No problems, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, Val's finally had it. You know, the hallucinations are getting worse. Now she's actually doing things that are endangering her child. And she goes back to the witches. She goes back to her aunt first and says, you know, the other witch told me that there was one other thing that she could do, but that it was, you know, kind of dark. But I'm thinking I want to do it. The aunt then kind of pulls her shirt down a little bit to show a burn scar on the left side of her chest. And says, I went through the ritual too, and this is what happened to me. Almost like just showing her, this is a very dangerous procedure. It may work, but you may not get out of this unscathed. So, what ends up happening? I'm skipping a lot, obviously, but I'm just going to go ahead and go right to the ritual. She ends up going back to the priestess, or did I say priestess? To the witch, to the head witch, and... they start the ritual. Again, the ritual starts with some basic chanting. Then the chanting starts getting louder, and we hear the women, you know, speaking Spanish words, you know, blessings and things like that, and protection spells and whatnot. Each person, each of the witches, I believe there's four of them at this point, are doing something different. One of them has a bundle of sage, and she's just kind of slamming it at the feet of Val. Another one has like a stick that has like some rocks in it that make like a rattling sound. So she's just sitting there chanting her words and rattling. You know, one of the witches is burning something in the air, blah, 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 blah. And then the hallucination starts. And my friends, this is where the what the fuck part of the movie kind of starts. She's basically walking through the woods. Everything seems normal. And then she comes upon this mound of flesh, basically what looks like a conglomeration of about a dozen people into one living organism, very similar to the end of Evil Dead Rise. I've already referenced that a couple of times, but yeah. You know, it looks like it's some kind of Lovecraftian nightmare of human bodies melded together. But then the bodies start coming apart, not coming apart, but separating. It turns out they were not an amalgamation of flesh. They were just a bunch of individual bodies just kind of writhing. All of them are naked, though none of them are showing any particular parts. You know, it almost looks like they're Barbie dolls. You know what I mean? Like nothing up top, nothing at the bottom, just kind of straight. They also don't have faces, which I thought was kind of cool. I think that might kind of point to the autonomy, the female body autonomy situation, because there are women and men in this writhing, you know, a weird faceless orgy that we're looking at. And like I said, suddenly the bodies start to separate and they all start crawling towards Val. Val doesn't know what to do. Before she realizes it, she's surrounded. She's completely surrounded by these faceless, body part-less, you know, beings that she's seeing. Suddenly they engulf her. They all jump on her and they start breaking all of her bones. They break her arm. They break both her legs. They break her neck. They just basically just break a bunch of bones. And then finally we get the aftermath shot of Val on the ground with all of her bones broken. Her head is twisted the wrong way. Very similar to the opening of It Follows, the girl on the beach who had like her legs bent the wrong way and broken, blah, blah, blah. Kind of similar to that. And then after we see that image of Valerie dead and broken on the ground, we get another kind of hallucination. This time it harkens back to the burning woman at the beginning of the film. And what we see is Val looking at herself. The woman, the mysterious woman in the robe, is just another version of her. And she basically, I forget her exact words, but she says something to Val and then suddenly just bursts into flames and starts walking away. After she bursts into flames and finally walks away, Val ends up waking up, coming to from, you know, the hallucination, the ritual, all of it. And the witches are there with her. They have her child there with her. She brought her child to a fucking witchcraft ritual. I don't know, you know, why, but there you go. And I mean, I think in the movie she says something like, I need to protect my daughter from this thing that's haunting me. Obviously, she's not really aware of what this thing is at this point. So like I said, she sees the image of the burning woman walk away. She wakes up and then her aunt tells her the ritual worked. You are free. You're free of this curse. And then the last thing that we see is she ends up going back home, and it's not the same day. Obviously, some time has passed, and we see her saying goodbye to Raul and to her newborn child, grabbing a suitcase and leaving. And that's the end of the movie, my friends. She basically just makes the decision to leave. Now, like I said, after sleeping on it, I came up with an interpretation of what actually happens here, and I'm probably completely off base, but here's my interpretation. What I think is that Val was always conflicted about whether she wanted to have a child or not. There was the Val that would be a good mother, nurturing, caring, protective, all of that, but then there's the Val that just... the other one who didn't want to be a mother, who wanted to make furniture, you know, who wanted to be independent and maybe even wanted to be a lesbian, because, you know, she never really makes it all that clear on which way she would rather go. So what I'm thinking is that when they burned the other image of her, her other self, what I'm thinking is that it gave her the bravery to make the decisions that she wanted to make the whole time. So when she comes out of the ritual, she basically decides, you know what? I don't want a child and I don't want to be married to a man. And basically now she has the bravery to go and tell Raul and her family, hey, fuck all you. I'm going to do what I want and what I think is right for me. So with that interpretation, it kind of boosted the movie up a little bit for me, because like I said, the hallucination started pretty much as soon as she found out she was pregnant. And I think the fear of finally being pregnant kind of, like I said, it amplified her doubts. It amplified her fears that she might not be a good mother. And so the ritual maybe doesn't necessarily get rid of the specter that's been haunting her. It just gives her the bravery to make the decision that she wants to make so that the specter doesn't bother her anymore. So, like I said, that's my interpretation.
Yeah, if anything, you can see the curse in this movie was her being cursed to a life that she didn't want. And I would go further. It's like not only – it's not so much that maybe she wanted to be a lesbian. She probably just was, right? Like, she just was a lesbian. And to me, what really sold it was there was a flashback scene, you know, from when they were teenagers out causing the mayhem. And eventually her and just the girlfriend character, Octavia, they're having like a, you know, a heart-to-heart. And it looks like they had plans to, like, move out of the city and go somewhere and like live a life. And, she backs out at the last minute, and her reasoning, A, she's like, I can't leave my family. But then two, it's the second thing she kind of says is she's like, well, I'm thinking about enrolling into college because, I saw the way my family reacted to my brother going to college. They were so proud of him. They were so happy. And like, keep in mind during the scene, you know, she has a shaved head. She's obviously either in a relationship or of one with Octavia. Punk rock music. They're obviously, you know, they're not like horrible, evil kids. They're just, you know, your typical, you know, out doing things that teenagers do. And it's kind of, she's at that crossroads where like, either I'm going to go all in on living life for me, or it's going to be like a thing that happens to a lot of people when they turn 18, and it's like they feel this pressure. I got to automatically put all this stuff away and go live the life that, like, my parents, family, society is basically saying you're supposed to do when you grew up. And she made that decision against her better instincts. She chose kind of like the structure of what the family wanted for her over what she truly was and wanted to do with her life. And I think that's part of like where that's part of the curse that was lifted through the movie. And I think like maybe some people watching it would think, oh no, the curse lifted is going to turn her into like the good mom, when really, you know, kind of the opposite. Being forced into motherhood, or pressure, I won't say forced, I'll say pressured into the motherhood structure, that was really the curse, it metaphorically speaking. And yeah, it's the life that she didn't want to be with. And I agree, at the end I interpreted it as she packed up and left. Now, was she leaving and completely abandoning like the child out of her life too? I don't know. I can't go that far because who knows? But she's definitely leaving the marriage. I know that.
Definitely.
But yeah, I think you got pretty much, I think you're pretty spot on with your interpretation. That's pretty much how I felt. What about you, Dom?
And then with that interpretation, that's the only connective tissue I can find with the legend of the Bone Woman. Let's go over the legend of the Bone Woman. Huesera is a Mexican myth about a woman who collects animal bones, but she specifically treasures lone wolf bones. Obviously, wolves usually run in packs, but this woman, she values lone wolf bones, and she collects them. And what she does is, once she has a complete skeleton, she sings the bones back to life. So at first, when it comes back to life, when the creature comes back to life, it is a wolf. But then it transforms into a woman and basically runs off to live her life. And that's why I like the kind of connection of Val leaving the marriage. She's become a lone wolf. She is the lone wolf. She's one of the creatures that the Bone Woman created. And I feel like the ritual in the movie just released that lone wolf. She's now able, like I said, now she has the bravery to walk away from her husband, to look at a life that's maybe not as set in stone, or, you know, not as safe, if you will, because Octavia is talking about moving up to the mountains and living a life outside of the city, which obviously is going to be a major transition for anybody, you know, who's you know, lived their whole life in a big city and then suddenly they're living, you know, on a mountainside or whatever. That could have been part of what scared Val off originally, because Octavia's always had this plan. She always wanted to leave the city and, you know, go live in the forest, the mountains. They call it the mountains in the movie. So that's the only real connective tissue I see with the actual legend of the Bone Woman and this movie, is that Val is the lone wolf. She is the entity that the Bone Woman created. And maybe that's what the specter in the movie is too. Maybe the specter is the Bone Woman that created her, and she's not happy with her life. It's like, hey, I created you to be a lone wolf, to be an independent woman, and here you are bowing to your husband and to your family and to society and everything else. So maybe that's why she was, you know, fucking with her, you know, giving her these horrible hallucinations and whatnot. And that's maybe why the Bone Woman is now gone, because she has become the lone wolf that the Bone Woman wanted her to be. So that's about the best connective tissue I can come up with.
Yeah, that was really close to where mine was, too. Mine was not that the ritual was supposed to cleanse her of the spirit. Mine was supposed to give her clarity as to what's going on. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's not about cleansing the spirit away from you. The spirit is there as either protective, or it's there as a malicious figure, depending on how you view it. And realizing that what you want it to be is the purpose of the whole, you know, I guess the whole ritual, I guess that's the whole point of it, is that it's supposed to give you clarity as to what you want it to be.
Absolutely. I would still be very curious to hear the opinions of, you know, some of our female listeners and horror fans and podcasters who watch this movie. I would love to hear their interpretation of the entire film and then the ritual itself too, and what it kind of meant to Val by the end of the movie. That would be an awesome conversation to have. But yeah, unfortunately, the universe did not align with us this time. But yeah, actually talking about the movie actually makes me like it a little bit more. I think my rating actually just went up like a half point talking about it. So, you know, I never wanted to imply that it's a bad movie. It's objectively not a bad movie. It's just a matter of if this story resonates with you or not. And at first it didn't really, but after sleeping on it, it resonates with me a little bit more, still not at the level that I would like it to, you know, especially for a Spanish horror film, which I almost always gravitate towards. But this particular time, you know, still good, just in my opinion, not great. But lots of potential. I am very curious to see what this director does next, because if this is a feature-length debut, she's got big things ahead of her, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for this to be so early in her career, I thought it was excellent. Yeah, I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the approach, how it was written, and I figure I might be biased too, because I don't know if it's just me getting older and I relate, maybe not directly, like obviously being not male, there's only so much I can relate, but I think just with the psychological horror in general, it seems to cover a lot of themes that are pertinent to just, you know, my age group, especially something like this one. It deals with kind of the pressures, because, you know, I'm getting to the age where most of my peers, female peers, if they aren't mothers yet, they're probably not going to be, and it could be by choice, it could be fertility issues, you know, there could be tons of different reasons. Mm-hmm. So like watching a movie like this, obviously, you know, I still can only directly relate so much, but it's something I would highly like recommend to, like, you know, my peers, just because of the story and all. Yeah. That. Same with Clock, really, you know, I think they're both worth a watch. I think this is a stronger movie, but I think touch on the similar themes.
Yeah, agreed. This movie is definitely head and shoulders better than Clock. I mean, you know, despite me being a little bit down on the second half of the film, it's still vastly better than Clock. It's just a more interesting story, more interesting characters, a better made film in general. So yeah, definitely. But if anything, Mike, speaking to your point, you are the only person here who's actually had kids. So even though you can never be pregnant, you still have that experience of living with a woman, dealing with pregnancy, the highs, the lows, you know, the emotions, all of it. So, you know, if anything, yeah. I would trust your opinion.
If we would have thought about it, it would have probably been better to, especially with the delay in recording, probably sit down with your wife and have her watch it and give her opinion.
That would have been cool, actually.
Yeah. The only caveat to that, obviously it would still be better than like no female perspective. The only difference is like when it comes to my wife specifically, she is more of like she had the perspective of like, I'm kind of born to be a mom type opinion. So like, she didn't experience like the same pressures, because she always knew she wanted it, even though we didn't have kids till like, a, you know, later than some people, she still always knew she wanted to. But even with that, I'm sure she has like friends in her circle, you know, that could probably relate and all that. So yeah. But I mean, overall, I agree with Dawn. I don't know if it's like my one of the year, but if I had to make a list right now, it would be on my list.
It would be in my top five right now. I mean, we're not even halfway done with the year yet. So it's just, I don't see it staying in my top 10 unless 2023 turns out to be a very down year for horror. I don't anticipate this one being up there, but yeah, as of right now, it's in my top five. Definitely. I like I said, I gave it a fairly high rating. I rated it higher than most of the people on IMDb anyway. IMDb gives this thing a 6.1. That doesn't even make sense to me. This movie is way better than a 6.
Yeah, I wonder how many total reviews, because
2,100.
I don't even know how many people.
2,172 reviews.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll see in the next couple of weeks as more people see if that shoots up, like, either ratings and number of reviews, because I have a feeling, you know, it might be one that kind of slips through the cracks for, like, its initial drop on Shudder, but as people start seeing it in word of mouth.
I wonder how many Spanish horror fans are going to go into this thinking they're getting something different. And then halfway through, they're like, wait a minute, this isn't about the Bone Woman.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's probably going to do it for our discussion on the Bone Woman then. What was I going to say? Maybe nothing, but let's see where else we can be heard. So I'll start with Venom. What do you got out there right now?
All right. The latest episode of No More Room in Hell presents Creature Comforts, which is episode number 17, is now in the can. I am in the process of editing that right now. That should be out sometime later this week. On that episode, our friend David Garrett rejoins us for the second time on the show, and we discussed The Monster from 2016, a great little early A24 film, which I had actually forgotten was an A24 film until I rewatched it recently. So that was interesting. But yeah, that was a fun episode with David, you know, returning guest. So, you know, check that out once it's available. Let's see, the main show episode, what are we up to, 53? We are scheduled to record that this week, and we're actually going to have a little bit of a different, not a different format, but we're going to be looking at a couple of different movies. All I'm going to say is that they are not straight horror films. I'm going to leave it at that. And no, they're not psychological thrillers, but for now I'll leave it at that until, you know, Derek always likes to make his little announcements on Facebook, so I'll leave that for him. But yeah, that'll get recorded this weekend, fingers crossed, if everything works out well. Hopefully that'll be out a little bit after that. And then we finally do have a date to record the third episode of No More Room in Hell presents The Crystal Lake Gift Shop. We should have another episode of that available right around the end of the month. Still locking down a guest right now, but obviously it's episode 4, so we'll be looking at episode 4 of the Friday the 13th TV series. So check that out when it's available. Guest spots on the return of Kill the Cast, where we had a roundtable of the dead to discuss some of our favorite zombie movies. And I think that's everything I have right now, Mike.
All right, Don, how about you?
Yeah, as mentioned, Creature Comforts is recorded, should be available soon. That was a fun time. Wish the movie would have been better, but we'll let that comment be evaluated further on the show proper when that gets released. Several guest spots. I have recorded with Stu World Order. That was a look at Red 2 and on The Road to Nowhere, where I talked about several Lucio Fulci films. Both of those are, I don't know when they're recorded. They've been recorded for almost a month now, so I don't know when the timeline is for those. There's a guest spot that's scheduled, but I don't have confirmation on when that's going to be recorded yet, which will be on the DVD Infatuation podcast, where we will be looking at the topic is just six movies you haven't seen, but I'm going to turn it into six films from genres that will define who I am as a movie viewer. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to finally getting that locked down and discussed. And finally, on my main show, The Horror Countdown, one of my favorite episodes is finally released. I'm joined by our boss, Phil, and we looked at our 10 favorite Alfred Hitchcock movies. So it's a fun time, because I've very rarely, if ever, discussed my early filmmaking introduction to the genre through him. So that was always a little highlight of my past that I've never really had a chance to talk about, and finally got to do it. So that was an absolute blast. And I mean, it's Phil, so we all know who we all know how much fun he is to hang out with and talk shit about movies with. So, yeah, that was a blast. And I'm finally glad that is available now. I guess I'm just waiting on for the new releases, for the releases to come out, and when my DVD infatuation show is going to record. But, yeah, I guess that's all for me.
That show ought to be awesome. I fucking love Hitchcock. I've said it before. He's like a top three director for me. He's probably right around, you know, Guillermo del Toro will always be my favorite director. John Carpenter will always be my favorite horror director. And then it's Hitchcock, the master of suspense. And a lot of what I like from Hitchcock isn't even his ultra popular stuff. Psycho and the Birds, those are all great. But check out stuff like Marnie and Rope, some of his less celebrated films. They're
Rope is a
great.
Rope is a fantastic. I love them. I
Rope,
love
Rope is actually my favorite Hitchcock movie.
Really nice. Yeah, it made my. I think I had it at like 9 or 8.
Just because it's such a weird,
yeah,
not very Hitchcock movie. You know what I mean? And the fact that it's supposed to look like it's one long shot, even though there are a few cuts in the film. I think the whole movie is 6 reels. So, you know, there's only 5 cuts in the whole movie. So, that brilliant filmmaking.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one. Vertigo got a lot of love. Strangers on a Train got a lot of love. Rear Window got a lot of love. The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I think the most obscure one we went with was Shadow of a Doubt.
Ooh, that's different. I don't know if that'd be in my top 10, but I do like it.
Yeah, like I said, that's kind of like I don't know like the full scope of where that one lies, but I think that one was probably like the most obscure one we brought up. And we both actually had it on the same exact tier listing.
So awesome.
Yeah, that one was kind of cool where we got to pull that one out of the head at the same time. So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, that should, you know, probably tell you where we both lie on that one. But, yeah, Hitchcock was a fun time. And like I said, he's been one of the most overlooked facets of my youth that I've never really talked about. So finally getting a chance to do a full-on deep dive with him was a lot of fun.
All right. As far as I go, just the main show that's out. We are scheduled currently to be recording episode 53. And then I actually am scheduled for a guest spot on the show. But because you know how those things goes, I'd rather just announce it after it's recorded so I know for sure it happens. So if all goes well, by the next episode of Fresh Cuts, I'll mention what it was and what we did and all that kind of good stuff. I guess the only thing left to do before we're gonna have to go VOD again.
Yep.
I think. Is that correct? Because
yes, sir.
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a dry spell as far as theatrical releases, so you know, there's options. We'll keep our eyes open to see if there's any bigger releases on VOD coming up this week, but we'll definitely have something for you in another week's time. That said, though, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to get out of here, so let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
Nos vemos ahorita, mi amigos.
Peace.